Well, we've made another new friend today on the award-winning For the People. I'm so excited to make the acquaintance of Emily Ong, and she is with an organization called Girls Who Code. So we're going to tell you all about that. But first, we want to talk about girls who sell cookies. That's right. No matter what your political party affiliation, all people can agree that Girl Scout cookies get the top vote as the tastiest treat. Now through election week, Girl Scouts of Connecticut are giving people delicious reasons to come out to the polls and to visit local businesses because they're hosting cookie booths at various voting locations throughout the state. More than 300 booths will be available through next Sunday, November 10th, and many of these Girl Scouts are also participating in the Girl Scouts of Connecticut's Gift of Caring Service Project, which is called Cookies for Heroes, where you can purchase cookies to be delivered to active military men and women, veterans, and local community heroes. Last year, 125,000 packages of those cookies were sold just for this cause. So we hope you can get out there and support all the incredible things that Girl Scouts of Connecticut are doing for our young women here in Connecticut. And if you want to get your Girl Scout cookie fix up to November 10th, you can find out all the different locations of where that is happening at gsofct.org. Okay, so here we go. Very pleased, as I said, to make the acquaintance of Emily Ong with Girls Who Code. That's a renowned nonprofit dedicating to closing the gender gap in tech. They're building the largest pipeline of future female technologists in the country, and they've already served over 670,000 girls, young women, and non-binary individuals to date, including 218,000 alumni through their pipeline of free programs from third grade through early career. So that sums up the boilerplate, Emily. Thank you for joining us. Let's turn our attention to our conversation here. And first, a little bit about yourself. Were you sort of a computer coding or math or other STEM interest nerd coming up as a younger person?
That's a great question, John, and so excited to be here. I am an aspiring coder. I've always been interested in technology, but actually formerly before Girls Who Code came more from the educational equity space, longtime advocate of young people and becoming change makers in their respective interests and passions. So that's really what brought me to Girls Who Code, finding ways to use the coding skills. But like true Girls Who Code fashion, we always find ways to connect it back with social justice, this impact, and finding a way to make a positive impact in the community. So that's really what drew me to Girls Who Code. And because I joined, now I'm learning coding through our free programs as well. We have a little Girls Who Code club in our office. So I've been learning data science and Python and Scratch. So it's been a very fun journey that I'm excited to continue on.
Well, great. Talk more about that, Emily, and the organization itself. Was this around a long time before you found it, or was it like a brand new thing that you came across and were like, oh, I want to get in on this at the ground level?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we were founded in 2012, and it really was at the start or the initiation of this movement for STEM and movement for, you know, increasing representation in this space. So we were really pioneering a lot of that work at that time in 2012 with that mission, of course, like you mentioned, to close the gender gap in technology. And we really want to change that image of what a programmer looks like and does. So we've been around a while. We've had multiple iterations and innovations to really drive our work forward, especially with cutting edge technology, really changing the way that we work on, you know, such a quick basis. And so I got started at Girls Who Code about 7 years ago in 2017, in its kind of teenager phase, essentially, to be able to continue growing the organization. We've scaled extremely quickly, you know, since we started out with 20 girls in a small classroom, partnered with a company partner who donated their space and taught them coding over a summer program. And now with that 670,000 we've served, you know, the number keeps going up because we know the demand is there for the students and the demand is there for, you know, the workforce they want to go into. So we're happy to meet that there.
So where are you and where is this organization, where does this organization call home?
Yeah, we're an international organization. So we do serve students all around the country. We and internationally as well. Now we have a main office in New York where most of our staff are located, but we're sprinkled really throughout the full country as well.
Around the globe,
And we serve students all over.
So as far as you're concerned, 7-ish years you've been with the organization, and you mentioned, needing to be cutting edge at all times because, the old cliche is the minute you acquire something, it is almost become obsolete. So in the 7 years that you've been with the organization, let's hear a little bit about how it has really worked so hard to try to, pivot in the right direction when they see new things coming, including, bubbles of interest or any kind of public initiative that is created across the world of Girls Who Code and the communities where the girls come from, where there are these like maybe concentrations of promotions or projects or efforts on a hyper-local level to really push young women into these STEM fields, and Girls Who Code is actually a fantastic, partner or supplement to that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I would say, when we started, it was very much an in-person summer immersion program, small different classrooms in different company partner locations in major cities. It's such a fantastic program. It's been longstanding for us, which is fantastic. We see a lot of growth. But immediately, in 2013, that's when we said, okay, how are these students learning all year round? How do we not only spark that interest, but how do we persist that interest throughout their entire educational journey and into their professional careers? And so because of that, then we started hearing from different schools and libraries that oftentimes it's hard to access free curriculum, free resources to push this forward. Especially when our generation was growing up, we weren't learning these different pieces yet, And so in our own educational training, we might not have as much skill sets, in these areas to be able to teach the students. And so we said, okay, hey, how do we create an after-school clubs program where we give literally everything under the sun to a teacher, a librarian, anyone in the space, even Girl Scouts, troop leaders, YMCA leaders, whoever it might be, where they can access these free materials and help students learn all year long. So we created a program that was for 6th to 12th graders, then it expanded to 3rd to 5th graders as well, so that way we can really support students at every single part of their journey. That's been really impactful, and that's been a great way for us to be innovative by constantly adjusting our curriculum based on what we're seeing in the tech space, but also in the community. And that's also been a way we've been able to be very hyper-local as well. Mm. We partner with over 670 different school districts, library networks, nonprofit organizations, both locally and nationally, to help drive this work because they also believe in what we do and want to access these free resources to help fuel the mission forward. Mm. But then not only that, once we had those students, we needed to say, okay, our alumni, they're finally getting older. They're now in college and now they're in early career. We've developed programs every step along the way after hearing from alumni. So if they say, hey, it's been really hard to address the technical interview process or how to navigate the space in a professional setting, we're like, okay, great. We're adjusting, innovating, creating new programs to really meet them where they're at. And meet the needs of the moment, essentially. And especially with AI now, we're at an exciting time as an organization with our strategic plan to refresh our vision for the next 5 years, reach 5 million more girls, non-binary students, and young women to help drive this work by scaling our programs, infusing even more cutting-edge technology and AI into our curriculum, activities, and work. And then also thinking about how are we supporting our alumni in persisting in this space. Mm. So lots has happened over the past 12 years, but we know it's important and that is why. And so our team works really hard to make sure everyone's supported around the world.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting and it makes complete sense that one of your prime partners are libraries because as you and I have seen, even over the past 7 years that you've been with Girls Who Code, so many libraries across the country are still coming to grips with kind of the shift like from video to stream, you know, sort of from like Netflix in the mail to streaming, like, you know, it's a sea change there. So libraries are beginning to become much more responsive to both trying to support businesses, especially advanced businesses, in their communities and in their states, but also to help to try to connect young people to career opportunities in those businesses. So the library end makes sense from a corporate partner standpoint. Certainly their altruism is evident and absolutely necessary and justified, but selfishly too, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the scouts going down to South America to look for high school baseball players. You know, it's like you get middle school and high school young women into these coding classes in with these corporate partners, and maybe they're like, wow, you know, there's the next, you know, mastermind of coding, and she's sitting right here in our offices. We should make sure our human resources department knows about her.
Yeah. Exactly. And honestly, I mean, you touched upon two things I always get really excited about. One is the work that libraries do. They do so much. And like you said, you know, oftentimes they're doing so much. And so how can we support them in really being hubs in the community? Two of, you know, some of my favorite partnerships are the Long Island Library Resource Council, as well as the Connecticut State Library, that they both support, you know, so many different libraries across Connecticut and Long Island in particular. But they've been fantastic. And I think, you know, it's a great way to say, hey, okay, perfect. How can we continue to be, you know, at the forefront, so we could be a tech hub also for our community and what they need now? So that's been great to see. And like you said, the partners too, the companies we work with, see that direct translation in the community through the work that we do, but also see the direct access to the hiring pipeline, like you mentioned. I mean, a lot of the corporate partners we have, and that could be a range of every single industry, because really tech touches upon everything. We partner with folks who invest in our work and think about, okay, how can I have meaningful engagements with these students? We have volunteer opportunities, you know, around either virtually or in person. We have, you know, branding and visibility opportunities to showcase different companies so students can know how to explore these careers and that these careers exist in so many different types of ways. And then also the hiring pipeline access, where we have, you know, like you mentioned, the 218,000 college and career ready alumni. They're ready to go for jobs and internship opportunities and have the training to really thrive in those roles. And the background, you know, we not only teach our young people the technical skills, but we also want to think about, okay, how are we building their confidence, their resilience, their bravery, their leadership skills and public speaking skills? All these different pieces that are equally as important as the technical aspects. And that's what really helps them thrive in those different roles with our companies. And so they're able to come in and really see that tangible impact. One of our company partners, for example, they've been renewing, you know, their partnership with us every single year, and they've hired over 100 of our students over the past like 2 years, which is great to see. And they even have a community of students, you know, within that company. It helps them build, you know, more diverse thought and value in their work. So we see that direct translation, and we're hoping to, you know, that continues as we, you know, close that gender gap in tech. And right now we're on track, you know, to close the gender gap in entry-level tech jobs by 2030 through those partnerships.
Well, that's great. Well, we're going to ask parents to cover their kids' ears now, because we're going to introduce the S word. I'm interested in now knowing how people like you, Emily, and your colleagues at Girls Who Code are addressing the stigma issue and working toward destigmatizing this idea that this kind of career track and this level of attention to this type of STEM family learning is not the right place necessarily for a young woman or non-binary person to go.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, we're trying to face those stigmas and change those perceptions all the time. You know, I think for us, we know, and AI could be scary, to be honest. You know, I think there's always that thought as well. But I think when these new technologies are used ethically and with human design in mind, I think we can make really transformative change for our lives and the people who we love. And also, you know, there's not only, I think, that kind of societal element there, but also in terms of the students and, you know, like parents thinking about it for their kids, STEM jobs pay 26% more than other careers. You know, there's so much room for economic growth and movement here. And there's, you know, it's the fastest growing industry or occupation in the country. I think we're expected to add, you know, more than 500,000 jobs between now and 2029, according to a research study. So we know there's growth out there. But at this point in time, you know, we need more girls, young women, and non-binary folks in the space. There's only women hold only 21% of computing degrees. They're only 25% of the tech workforce. They're actually only in 5% of leadership roles in tech. And we want to change that. And we know that there's opportunity there because of that disparity. So how do we get our young people there? And we often do that through representation. We often say, you know, you cannot be what you cannot see. And so how do we get representation in front of these students? How do we get them a sisterhood or a network of community of peers and role models to help them, encourage them, and help them persist? And then how do we think about connecting these skills to what they care about? You know, students have so many wide variety of passions, and they don't just have to think about, you know, what they might envision in their head as a traditional, you know, tech person. They could do anything, be in any single industry. So if they're passionate about building a website on environmental issues or an app around, you know, water conservation or, you know, educational equity, literally could be anything. But it's all really helpful in service of each other and in service of making the world a better place.
Yeah. And the other thing that is of interest is, more and more over the past decade, we're seeing studies showing the critical importance of the thought patterns and voices that, women and non-binary people are bringing into a male-dominated STEM environment, engineering, you know, manufacturing workforce, advanced manufacturing, or other technical fields. So this is really a movement whose time has come and is of critical need. So looking forward in the last minute or so that we have with you, Emily, what is in store next for Girls Who Code? What's the next big goal that you guys are going after?
Yeah, it's a good question. Right now, it's a really exciting time for us. We're embarking on our new strategic plan, which is essentially outlining our vision for the next 5 years as we scale our programs, infuse more cutting-edge technology, and think about supporting our alumni who persist in this space. So we're always looking for students at any age to get involved, join our programs, access all of these things completely for free with stipends, grants, and even tech access if they need it. You know, it doesn't hurt, and it helps them to network with different companies and really build a pathway for their career, no matter what age they're starting with. So we encourage them to join us. For the teachers, educators, librarians, et cetera, you know, definitely access our free resources. It's such a great supplement to what they're doing already, or a great way for them to have a standalone program with very minimal prep time, which we know is always precious. and the companies or larger school districts and folks on a larger level, always happy to partner with folks and see how we can be, you know, this really collective community to make a more transformative impact together.
If you happen to know a young woman or non-binary person who might be interested in learning more, we would certainly love to have you visit and maybe even consider donating to Girls Who Code at girlswhocode.com. This renowned global nonprofit is dedicated to closing the gender gap in tech. We're building the largest pipeline of future female technologists in the U.S. in partnership with this organization. And they've already served almost 750,000 girls, young women, and non-binary individuals to date, including 218,000 alumni through the pipeline of free programs from third grade on through early career. Emily Ong has been our guest this morning, talking so excitedly and articulately about this cause. You've got to get involved, people. We've got to get young women and non-binary people into our workforce here in Connecticut, across the country, and around the world. And Girls Who Code is helping to make that happen. So get to know them. Emily, I'm glad I got to know you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.